like, I'm surprised the men are like lined around the block to date Lindsay, because she is really stunning and tall and impressive and fun and smart. She's the whole package.
Man, damn. I want to be in a relationship with you. Because I am a MILF. Come on. I am a mother in litigation forever, and that is the cause. And I am the founding member of the MILF Mafia. So please come and join us in this movement.
You're a bear and you want to hibernate. Wouldn't you want another bear in your cave, Michelle?
No, I want a fucking lion.
But we didn't need a podcast to tell us that. No. That's just,
it was musings, things I would have told you in therapy. And it was a letter that he would have said to a therapist if I agreed to go to therapy with him for like the fifth time. And it was, I talk about it, I've read it on the show, and it ends with, if you were ugly, you'd be dead. So you know, as a judge and as a lawyer, like, you're looking constantly for those patterns. So somebody doing something one-off, you're like, you know, you can justify it. You could be like, well, they had a bad day, they had all these things, whatever, we're all human, we make mistakes. But if the pattern is showing up consistently, constantly, that they reach into that bag of dirt and throw it at you every time, it's never going to change. There's not a way that you can love them better. There's not like cellulite you can remove from your thighs that'll make them nicer. You cannot fuck better. You cannot. There's nothing that will change who they are at their core.
The information shared in this podcast is intended for entertainment purposes only. It should not be considered as professional legal advice or a substitute for seeking professional legal advice. I'm Michelle Locke, and this is Love, Lust, Law. As the host of Bitch is a Bad Word, Lindsay brings authenticity, empathy, and lived experience to every conversation. Having navigated her own journey of healing from domestic violence while co-parenting with her abuser and raising four children as a single mother, she creates a safe and compassionate space for survivors to share their stories. Her insight allows her to ask meaningful questions, connect deeply with her guests, and guide conversations with both sensitivity and strength. Through her voice and leadership, Lindsay not only amplifies the experience of the survivors, but also empowers listeners with hope, understanding, and the belief that healing and life beyond trauma are possible. Lindsay, welcome.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about you?
I come from a background in the entertainment business. I have worked in film and television forever, and I was an actor on a show you might have heard of called The Walking Dead. And that's about the time that my story and journey into toxic and domestically abusive relationships began. And I was working in this industry. I was divorced. I had two young kids. And I was also working on the number one show in the world, although we were remotely in the backwoods of Georgia. And had no fucking idea that the entire world was obsessed with shows about zombies. And we're like, who the hell is going to watch this? Like, see, this pilot's going to die on the editing room floor. But we had fun. No, it didn't. It ended up going on for 18,000 years. And it's the coolest, you know, story of human survival ever. And I had the great pleasure and fortune of working on that show. And I started on the pilot. I was the stand-in for the lead. And worked for the first season, and then I auditioned for a role, landed it, and next thing you know, I'm on the other side of the camera as Rowan, the governor's lady friend. And the coolest thing about it was, if you work in entertainment or you work in any job and you've worked really hard, I've done everything. I've been a set PA, I've been a stand-in, I've run scripts, I've done anything you can imagine. If I could get on a movie, I've been on Fast and Furious as a set PA. If I could get on a movie, I would. And I've done all the work. I did the auditions. I've done how many times I've been turned down. And at this particular time in my life, I was finally getting yeses. Like, I just landed something I've worked really hard for. Opportunities are opening. Agents, you know, are obviously there to, more opportunities are happening. At the same time, I meet this person. This person thinks I'm fucking rad. You're on The Walking Dead. This is cool. This is like, I'm a nerd. I don't know. I work in tech or whatever they were doing. And I don't understand this world, but it's so cool. That's the valuation part, right? I was on the pedestal. I was like, somebody super cool. All the things I was doing was really amazing. And then I'm like, okay, somebody gets it. And I kind of like that somebody's like not in the entertainment world. I kind of like that I'm not, you know, wrapped up in, like, I have somewhere to kind of disconnect. Anyway, as the relationship progressed super fast, as it does, I then became a slut. Everybody that works in film and television are cheaters. Anything that you do in the show, oh my God, are you kissing him? Oh my God, is this? Let me, like, what's the script say? Like, oh, it was the most vile and disgusting industry you could ever imagine. And all of a sudden, everything that you loved and liked about me, you now despise and hate. And I drank the Kool-Aid. I started subscribing to it. Like, okay, okay. If it's that important to you that I don't do this, or, you know, or I'm limited into what roles I can play, if my kids can be involved in it, if we can, like, I can play a banker or I can do something, you know, limit my scope of work, then, you know, this relationship can work and I can, you know, be a good housewife and a good partner to you, and I won't embarrass you by having, you know, a sex scene on TV or whatever it is. This moment entered into this relationship and it was still ongoing. I lost myself. Everything about what made me cool and everything about the things that I love to do completely got lost, not only in motherhood as it happens, but with a partner who just wanted full control. So I lost everything, and work-wise, I gave it up. I gave it up under I thought, okay, I'll get back into it maybe one day. But then it was so tainted. I felt like everything that he said that I was doing in that world wasn't even true, but I believed it. I thought I should just be a good wife, a good mother. I was told if I went back to work, I was a child abuser. So I believed all of those things and spent a long time never working. I was a kept woman, as he would call me. And he's like, look at your dumb friends with their dumb jobs, paying their dumb bills, ruining their relationships. You don't have to worry about anything. I have all of your best interests at heart. We're great. We're amazing. We're this. You're kept. You get to do all these things. And what was slowly happening was that I was losing not only who I was as a woman, but I lost complete autonomy. I had no financial autonomy. I had no securities, no nothing. And at the end of the day, when I decided to believe a threat that they made on my life, that this is the one I'm going to choose to believe, after all the bad words, after all the physical stuff, and I left. I'm a statistic that ended in, you know, I left maybe 3 or 4 different times and I'd come back. I'd have no money, or I felt like I had to make this work, whatever all the reasons that a woman goes back up to 7 times. Or if, you know, we know some of those statistics don't end well. I chose to believe a threat and I'm like, I'm leaving. I'm leaving and I'm doing this and I'm not coming back. And I had the help of some friends and I was able to successfully leave the relationship safely with no money, and I never got any money. So that the kept scenario, definitely it was real. But I decided to use my voice, use my experience, get back into what I know how to do. I know how to speak to people. I'm in the entertainment business. There's something that I can do with this. How do I tell this story so that it doesn't happen to somebody else? Or if it can happen to me, it can definitely happen to you. And then I want to teach you the things that I wish I had known. I want to get you to a place where I can turned my pain into this purpose. And this purpose is, if we can just save one woman from being a dead statistic, then we've done our work. And if I can stop someone who's listening to your show or to my show for just a moment and realize this is a pattern, they're never going to change. I'm going to go now, or I'm going to empower myself, or I'm going to find a way to make a living. Then, you know, again, I've done my job. I've done the work. So I ended up in this space as, you know, edutainment, I guess. And I saw a need to be able to talk about this topic that is really not amazing, a fun or palatable topic, and remove the stigma. If I can say the things that I say, if I can say, like, hey, bitch is a bad word. And I was called a bitch by my ex in front of my young kid. And he asked me, Mama, what's a bitch? I'm like, oh my God, bitch is a bad word. And then he wrote it down. This was like the innocence of anybody affected by domestic abuse. It affects everybody in the ecosystem of your home, right? And this is a young innocent. They're not ready for this word. Anyway, I kept it, the post-it on my fridge forever. And it was just like a reminder of like how far we came as a family. And also the cycles that I want to break. I really want for the world to understand that you're not alone, that it's not a you problem. It is them. And domestic violence is the greatest public health crisis of our time. And I really do believe it's an epidemic that, you know, with the right education, with the right, you know, people like us coming out and sharing our stories, taking the risks, being vulnerable, we can turn this around. We really can. We can stop the cycle.
Well, that is commendable and awesome. And that's kind of, I know why Jake does what he does. It's why kind of what I do. It's because if we can just save one person. I mean, I literally filed for divorce 7 times before I got divorced. No joke, 7 times. Which, you know, I'm sure there's some commentary behind that. But it's always, you think you can make it work. You think it'll change. You think it'll get better. If you just do this, it'll change. If you just do that, it'll get better. And it doesn't. And it happens, you know, on the domestic violence side. It happens with both genders. But y'all, so for the video doesn't do Lindsay justice. Let's just start with that. When I met her in person, I was like, holy shit, a knockout, tall, beautiful. I mean, like at 11 out of 10, y'all. If I was a lesbian, she'd be my type. I mean, just stunning and like a presence. but no, really, unless when I met her in person, I was like, holy shit. I'm like, I'm surprised the men aren't like lined around the block to date Lindsay, because she is really, you know, stunning, and tall and impressive and fun and smart. Like, she is the whole package.
Man, damn. I want to be in a relationship with you.
Can you imagine hearing that every day from Michelle's mouth? And she's dressed like this. This is how she wakes up, by the way.
Anyone that's watching, Lindsay is the bomb. She's an 11 out of 10, hands down. And then with a mouth that makes it entertaining.
Oh my gosh. Thank you, Jake.
Lindsay, you, how can I can't say, I can't say shit. You know that. I have to just shut the fuck up and listen. That's really the important part. And also be an advocate. Not speak for, but speak with and support. And that's a very important point there. So Lindsay, you are a very upstanding, young looking individual who has grace, style, elegance, and are completely hilarious. And while you don't make the best assessments when it comes to partnerships, and that's a really good segue.
Best story.
I would like best you to story. Share your perception. You may have forgotten by now, but we haven't. And we discuss it almost every show.
You're like, let's roll tape.
Which we will.
Yeah. Oh, we are now. We are rolling now. I get like, the, yeah, this is the pre-show.
We're let's go back and go back in time machine, shall we?
Michelle, put her on the stand. Let's do a cross.
I'm not doing a cross. Lindsay scares me a little bit.
I'm invoking my Fifth Amendment right.
Right.
No, I'm going to invoke my First Amendment right, and I'm going to fucking talk about it. So I definitely meeting the two of you. I mean, it was like in the dodgiest place. She's like sending me a pin. I'm like, there's no fucking way that this is right. Like from everything I've ever seen about her, this is not where we're meant to be. And so then we were like locking down everything in our car, because I think we had like a few $1,000 worth of wine in the car.
Yes.
We were doing some sort of event he was going to. So then we're like, We're like, we can't park here. When you want to stay and you want to walk, he's like, hell no, you're not walking by yourself. So we get there and I was like, it just felt like we were walking into like a Godfather scene where it was just,
absolutely.
I don't know what was going to happen. There's going to be money in the floorboards and there's some guns on the table. Like, that's what I just sort of felt.
Instead of a dog under the table.
And then, there was a giant dog on the table. The food was like chef's kiss and the company was amazing. And I'm like, met everybody in your circle, like trying to identify where everybody fits in. Like, you have an entourage. And I'm like, what the fuck? Okay, this girl's chick. I really like you. Let's, okay. And then I was trying to identify everybody's roles in my mind. And like, I could only just sort of like deduce like, well, you two must be fucking, because otherwise, like, there's only like one guy at the table. And
So and he was sitting right next to me.
He was. And then there was this like an energy. But then I, so that was my initial gut feeling was like, what's happening here? Who goes?
You two effing? We're like, yeah. And both of them were here. Like, we're like, no.
Well, it's normally a question reserved for, let's say, a private setting, maybe a cocktail party. But the fact that it was not only in public and that table was kind of almost in the doorway of the restaurant. If you notice, like you kind of walk in the first room you're in, you're just kind of, oh, hey, I've got 30 other dinner guests surrounding me or whatnot. So I almost thought it was really interesting. That was kind of like the first introduction. And I admire that. And I was very curious about what your sort of perception was of that. Now I get a little more clarity on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was like, I was just kind of reading the room or just trying to understand. And again, like as a storyteller, I love the idea of just like, okay, let's just put everybody's piece, like play their pieces, which I will tell you sometimes really works in my favor or other times it doesn't. And when it doesn't, I end up in relationships with people who I've made a story in my mind that they are one way. And then I'm completely blindsided by my own fairy tale because they end up being the people that, you know, I talk about on my show. So I really need to stop. I need to stop doing it because it's clearly my picker is fucking wrong. And I don't think it was wrong. Intuitive.
You picked up on the energy because Jake and I definitely have a yin and yang back and forth.
Yeah, absolutely.
But definitely not the sexual kind.
No.
Like I love Jake.
So once I learn the dynamic, then I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. This is, you have to have that like lusty energy for there to be like a good working dynamic where like things want to flow. I was just flowing and I was thinking like downward flow versus like mind flow. So
I
was
downward flow. I like that description. Yeah. Downward flow. I may have to use that.
Yeah. I just made it up.
I like that. It's downward.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's actually, are you my downward flow or my upward flow?
Right.
Let's check it out.
I like either or.
Huh. Michelle's all over the place. Michelle's picker goes like this. It's like the Gilligan's Island opening, the ship thing that spins and spins.
Yeah, my picker is unbelievably broken. But I'm working on making it better, right? Like you learn from your mistakes, hopefully.
You are.
Hopefully.
We do. Hopefully we evolve.
Hopefully, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, you are a bombshell. And I had the pleasure of like seeing you in all different capacities as like in just 24 hours. And I'm like, damn, this woman, I want her to be my bestie, but you're stunning and you're funny, but you're like the whole package, which is amazing. And I think that conversation in your kitchen, I mean, you were like, you hide behind the hat, which I thought was an interesting thing. So I was like, yeah, I do. Well, because I am a MILF, come on. I am a mother in litigation forever. And that is the cause. And I am the founding member of the MILF Mafia. So please come and join us in this movement. I have a persona on the show and I have a persona sort of in life as well, because again, there was a lot of things, as I referenced before, if you were ugly, you'd be dead. The reason why that hit so hard is that for when I was vulnerable and I went back into my life as a child growing up, I felt dumb. Because I had undiagnosed ADD, I had dyslexia. Like I couldn't figure shit out in like the few minutes that we had in class. But I was tall. I was funny.
Yeah, but like a 2-foot difference.
But I was really tall when those formative years. So like no guys were going after me. I felt really different. And so older people would say, you're so beautiful. You're beautiful. You're beautiful. And like my mom had me in like catalogs and like doing modeling or whatever shit. So I was like, I guess, but in my real life, everyday life, I wasn't getting asked out. My friends were all dating. My friends were kissing. So then I just started to like lean into humor. And that was my response, like, which ended up being my trauma response later. And why the show is the light that it is on Bitches the Bad Word is because that's how I just dealt with feeling things. Aww. So I was always the funny one. I was like the funny friend. And like 1 year, I got asked out by a kid named PJ Lamont. Wherever you are, you really helped me grow as a young middle schooler or whatever else. He asked me to a dance and he is the shortest kid in the class. He's so small and I'm tall. I like literally, I'm 5, I'm very tall. And I was like 5, probably 5'8". in middle school. So like I was already really tall and he asked me to the dance and I was like, oh my God, yes, yes. But it's like the difference was this. And I'm like, you're a fucking baller. Like you had the car, like you just did it. And he's changed so much of my, like my confidence in this way. But then I was like, I guess it shifted. Like, I can't go for this guy. I'm going to go. I always just sort of like, I got to aim, stay in my lane or sort of. Anyway, I'm not saying it because he's short. Maybe he's grown into himself. I have no idea. I've never seen him again. But my standard was set in such a way. So I say all this to be like, I never felt when someone said I was pretty, I was like, oh, that's because I think I'm dumb. Because I struggled in school, I was like, oh God, I'm only the pretty person. I'm only the funny person. I'm not the smart person. And I'm really smart. I just had to learn how to learn. And I am a visionary and I'm a really good CEO and I'm a really good, like all the things. But for so long, I had this just really bad confidence. And I felt like then as I got older, I was the, you know, you're so beautiful. You're so beautiful. That was the only thing that was coming to the conversation. And so I felt like everything I said after that, they're like, I don't hear you. And so I would always lean back to like, I guess it is because I'm dumb. I'm not smart. And then I was in a relationship with somebody sharing those vulnerabilities. And then that's what they would say. You're not smart. You can't figure this out. You're too dumb. And so that neurofeedback, that feedback loop that I kept having that like, you know, I'm either pretty or I'm dumb. I can't be both. I can't be this. I can't. You know, so I leaned into the humor. I downplayed, you know, my looks. I felt like if I got too dressed up, then I was trying too hard. I was trying to take over. So I'm really fucked up with like my self-image for a long time. And I'm coming into it now as somebody who's done a lot of healing and a lot of growth to say like, you can be all of these things. You don't have to just be one. And if any of those things are offending you, well, fuck you very much. And I want to destigmatize taking care of that if that's what you need to do. Or living, if you're fine and you love the way your body changed, like more power to you. God bless you. I hear you. I love you. I see you. Let's celebrate it. And let's also celebrate the woman who's like, I want to put the shit back where it was. I stand in the mirror like, oh, I remember when they were here. Like, how do I get back here? Like, if that's what you need to feel great again, you are allowed to own the shit out of that. Because again, you created a human, you populated the world and your body was the vessel. So change it. And I love like when women are like, oh, gross, like so much Botox or she did this or she did that. Like, who fucking cares? If that's what they need to do to feel better about themselves, and especially if you're coming from in a relationship with a pathological person, anything that they're telling you that you shouldn't do, you absolutely should go do those things. Because that's the
Ozempic and a dye job. I'm like, wasn't Ozempic. Let's start with that.
I love that person. I'm like,
like, oh, and I've had 3 C-sections. I'm like, you know, I'm going to get, now it's time for a thigh lift and a tummy tuck. And you know what? I don't have any problem owning that I want to go do that. Because you know what? I want to feel good in a bathing suit again. And I get to go do that. Yeah. I'm like, fuck it. I'm going to be 50. I'm going to be 50 and more fabulous than I've ever been in my life. That's the goal.
Oh, Michelle, we should find somebody who will do it for us and we'll do it on our shows like together. And we're like, we're going to go through like the whole experience.
I think that's a great plan.
And we can find someone who'll do it. That's really good.
So let's actually look into that. Cause you don't need anything.
No, I had my last baby was like 11 something pounds. I was huge. If one person had come up to me, I'd be like, are you having triplets? But there might be one less person on the planet if you say anything after that. I want mine to just go back up instead of being like elongated cones when I'm doing downward dog. I was reading too that you can take fat from your like other parts of your body and put it in your tits and you don't have to get silicone. I'm reading that you can take fat from your thighs or your ass or wherever and you can put it here and it fills it back in so that it gets high and tight.
But I'm going to put out there, any board certified plastic surgeons that specialize in mommy makeovers, which for me is a tummy tuck, thigh lift, and let's get the girls back up to where they used to be, you should reach out to Lindsay or I so we can have a discussion, because it is, I'm going into 50 fabulous.
Have tits, we'll travel.
I've talked about it before. It's like, what's that in court? You can't walk back from. I had one once where they said that it had to do with her cellulite on her thighs. Had more cellulite on her thighs than hail damage that Kansas City had. Like something like that in court. And I'm like, wow, that's next level of hatred of who you're with. If you're comparing their cellulite to hail damage in Kansas City.
Jesus. When you bring geography into your body parts, you know that that's the point of no return. Seriously, like I've got the XYZ the size of Texas. You know what I'm saying? My thing is bigger than California. Whatever it is. No, seriously. That's that. Literally, you know that that's the point.
Yeah,
of no
or
return.
It's yeah. There's a Texas size one and there's a New Jersey size one. Which one are you?
Or I've heard your vagina's so blown out that, you know, if I I'm like, my vagina's so blown out, I can just like shine a light in my mouth and I can like direct you to your seat in a theater.
Well, because you do the texties from the XTs.
I do the texties from
the XTs.
And
they're always that is, epic, epic statements.
There's some shit. I'm surprised by what people say to other people. And, you know, when I first started doing this, I was just reciting my own texties from my own XTs testies. And then I started receiving just anonymous ones. And I say all this because what I found fascinating in the human experiment was I could put all of these all on a wall. You wouldn't know the difference between the authors. They all read the same way. So I'm like, whatever dirty mag playbook these pathological people are passing around, it's like evident in the way that they feel.
It's
that
amazing.
They can just
like
talk to someone. You're like, oh my God. Like, you, this is the mother of your child. How could you think that this is in any way appropriate, no matter like what you think or feel? But anyway, as we know, they operate with one goal, one mission, and that's to bring you down in any way that they can and touch that pain body, touch that trigger. And oftentimes, or I would say almost 100% of the time, it's a trigger that you alert them to, right? They are taking inventory of you. You're sharing your deepest moments. You're being so vulnerable. You're sharing, you know, all of your fears, all of the bad, your body count, all the things. You're like, as you're getting to know, and they're like, please just tell me more so I can put it in my narc vault that I can later withdraw from, weaponize it, and use it against you like a freaking sharp tongue that they have. And the entire goal is to keep you down. The entire goal is to make you devalued so that you feel there's nobody better. Like, I'm so lucky that you're wanting to swim in my blown out vagina. So I guess this is the best I can get.
What's the worst one that you've read?
One of the worst ones that I've ever read was this. It was a relationship between a married couple. So they're still married and they're both litigators. They're both, he's higher up in whatever he does or whatever court he rules in. And she stopped working to raise the kids, but then they were still legally married. And then they were having to still work together for a little while. And he sends the most heinous shit to her.
Yeah. Cause lawyers are really good with words. And if they're a litigator in particular, they know how to basically slice you up with words very effectively.
Yeah, I feel like, if I can find it quickly, but, you know, it's like this man, he kept it. I mean, she's like sent me dozens because he keeps sending her these messages, just literally like attacking her as a mother, as a person. And then I'm like, and then you have to go to work together?
You know, I do want to ask you this, and this is what I learned from therapy when I was in couples therapy years ago, is don't say something you can't take back. And my question to both of you is, when you're in those situations, people don't realize how much words hurt. It's not just about being able to, you know, set a digital footprint or be able to use it against someone in a court case, but you really do damage to one's soul. And obviously it comes from a place of pain. It comes from a place of anger. But have you both been in those situations where you're hearing these words from someone, let's say an ex, and you're like, this is the point of no return for me?
I'll let Lindsay go first.
I mean, you can't unring the bell, right? So it's like, that's how I look at it. And what happened in my personal situation was that the things that were being said to me were so triggering because I was in a state of confusion. I shared a story. I was sexually assaulted when I was a teenager, and I shared the story. And then at one point, the conversation turned on me where he likened I was a cold fish. That's what he called me. You're a cold fish. You're not warm. I'm worried you're never going to like hold our baby. I was pregnant at the time. And, you know, it's probably because you were raped. And at this point, I'm like, I'm pregnant. I thought I was a good fuck. I've never been told otherwise. And now I'm with somebody and I've shared a vulnerable moment of being sexually assaulted. And now they're saying that the reason why they can't reach me in the bedroom, the reason why they've gone outside the relationship is because it must be my sexual assault. That's the next level of twisted and, yeah, you know, psychological warfare that it sat with me for so long. And then, of course, every single time we were intimate, that came in my head. Like all of a sudden now I had worked through my trauma. I had put that, you know, I worked really hard to come to terms with what had happened when I was a kid, and I was okay. It wasn't something I thought about every day. It was just something I shared in a moment when you are, you know, getting to know somebody. And like now I share it with the world. I'm like, maybe I shouldn't tell anybody. But no, I've shared it with the world because, you know, sexual assault is real. And the work that comes with that for anybody who's been a victim is so tremendous. It doesn't define you. But for somebody to be able to weaponize that and use that to truly devalue you so they can control you further is
yeah,
disgusting. And then I think the next one that sat in my head for a really long time because it was in the same conversation, it was musings, things I would have told you in therapy. And it was a letter that he would have said to a therapist if I agreed to go to therapy with him for like the fifth time. And it was, I talk about it, I've read it on the show, and it ends with, if you were ugly, you'd be dead. And like, how do you can't unhear that. You can't unread that. You can't change that. And if somebody is so willing, and why I do texties from the exes is that like someone's willing to put this in print, essentially, right? So you can't ever unsee it. You can't ever unfeel it. You can't ever unhear it. And so that's not your person. Like that should be so far away from the person. And the second that you hear this, and I think that victims of domestic violence especially become desensitized to the shit that they're being told, and like being called a cunt or a bitch or a whore is just sort of normal. It's just about like being called honey, sweetie, baby. And the desensitivity behind it is like, that's what I really want women to hear. It is like, I want to empower you because no one should be talking like that. Because the second you become desensitized to that and it becomes the norm, their level of abuse is going to tick up because you're no longer being affected by the bad words. They're going to start pushing you. They're going to start getting physical with you. That's just inevitable because they need to level up their game and they need to level up that dopamine hit that you're no longer giving them because you're desensitized to the shitty words.
Oh, no, you are. You become used to hearing that you're terrible. And then I love the apology afterwards. Oh, it's just things said in the heat of battle or the heat of the argument. I didn't really mean it. I'm like, no, you meant it. You meant every bit of it. Now you're trying to, it's like, you know, when you get drunk and you say, oh, yeah. I don't remember I was drunk, right? I said it and I was drunk, didn't mean it. And the alcohol just gives you just reduces your inhibitions for you to actually say the truth. But yeah.
It's true. The alcohol didn't make you an asshole or he didn't make you say it. Sometimes I am like, you got to take it up with that.
If drunk me said it, drunk go me. Talk to me when I'm drunk.
We're not the
I'm
same
sober,
person.
Then fine. Today. But yeah.
But...
Yeah.
No, but that doesn't excuse anybody's behavior. And listen, I mean, what we want to alert women, especially, I mean, or anybody in a relationship like this, it's time on attention, right? It's the patterns. You know, as a judge and as a lawyer, like you're looking constantly for those patterns. So somebody doing something one off, you're like, oh, you know, you can justify it. You could be like, well, they had a bad day. They had all these things, whatever. We're all human. We make mistakes. But if the pattern is showing up consistently, constantly, that they reach into that bag of dirt and throw it at you every time, it's never going to change. There's not a way that you can love them better. There's not like cellulite you can remove from your thighs that'll make them nicer. You cannot fuck better. You cannot. There's nothing that will change who they are at their core. And joke's on you, unfortunately, sadly, because these people are really good manipulators. They wore a mask for a really long time. They conned you into a relationship.
No.
And into a mindset and a belief setting that they were the guy, the one, the, oh my God, he's obsessed with me. He can't stop talking to me. He can't. I say this a lot. Like, pay attention to who's asking all the questions. If it's just them in the first few dates, like firing off rapid things, those people are literally wanting you to ask them nothing because they have to learn you and they have to like learn how they can manipulate you. And they're taking inventory. And the inventory piece is so important with a pathological person because they've got a memory like no other. Remember that time? The second you call them on something bad, they're like, really? Well, back in, you know, 1987, remember that time you told me I was a dick? Like the one time, right, that you said something in response, reactively or whatnot, they're going to hold it. And then every single thing you ever said, I used to hear, you're so much like your mother. Well, bitch, you never met my mother. But I used to tell you about her and I used to tell you about these things. But it was such like, it hurt me so much because I just like, no, I'm not. And then you're like, finding yourself defending that thing that's not even real.
Just when you think, oh, this is what they need and it'll get better, they're just going to move the target. The ball just gets moved. There'll be something else I need you to change. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, you can get the cellulite removed and lose all the weight and now you look great or whatever else. And then it's something else you need to do to change. And I'm just like, there is never a win. They're also never going to say, you're right, I'm wrong. You're never going to get them to say, sorry, I shouldn't have sent it. They don't stop and they keep going because they have a need to just make you feel like you are less than worthy of anything. And then they come back with the only I will ever love you this much, right? Because you've been so devalued that it's, oh, I'm so lucky that he still loves me despite how terrible I am. And you look at it and you're like, you're not really that terrible. You're really a good person. But sometimes it takes someone from the outside to say, hey, you are a good mom. You are a good woman. You are a good wife. And your partner is an asshole. And you also have to be in the right frame of mind to receive that type of, like when a friend leans in and says, hey, it took, in my case, a long time for me to see just how bad some of it was and how toxic it was. And even now that I've been out for 2 years now, there's stuff that's coming back now. I'm like, ooh, how did I put up with that? And you just do. Like, you just get so accustomed to the ugliness that you're like, well, just another day.
Well, there's a lot of shame associated too, right? So you're sitting there like, I can't believe I let this happen, or how am I here? There's also living in that silo with them, and you see the world for like only the way that they present it to you. You're looking at it through a really dirty lens. And it seems like it's okay at the time. And it's like, we all have heard this, it's insidious. It's just sort of by the time it happens and by the time you're aware, you've either invested so much energy, time, money, experience, life into somebody. Maybe you have kids, maybe you're living with them, maybe you've commingled your finances, maybe, you know, all the things that happen where you have to give yourself that grace to say like, now all of a sudden, 2 years later, I'm in this shit. Michelle, you're a fucking judge. If it can happen to you, it can happen to anybody, right? It's not an intelligence issue. It's these people are absolutely power hungry to control, manipulate, dominate, and they need the challenge. They need the smart, ambitious, go for it.
Oh yeah, they get the bigger high off it once they break it.
Because otherwise, like, yeah, a cat does not want to play with a dead mouse. So let's understand that as you're in the space and as they're telling you, no one's going to love you, you're the worst. It's just like they're master projecting their own shit. And you're like, you can come back and look at it, you know, after you're out and you see like, how the hell did, like, what was I thinking? You know, there's a million times where I've looked back at my relationship and thought like, these are all the red flags I chose to ignore. There were red flags flogging me in the face. And I was like, well, this is kind of fun. And if you're an empathic person, which is another target they look for, you really do believe that you will be different. And the ex was crazy and she was a bitch. And oh my God, I believe everything he's saying. I'm not that person. I'm fucking rad. Like, yeah, I can love you the way you need me to love you.
Oh yeah. You think you can do it? Uh-huh. Yeah. That she was crazy. I'm so sorry. She wasn't crazy. So my question, Jake, that I still have to go back to is what is cuffing?
I want Lindsay to describe what cuffing, you know what cuffing season is, Lindsay?
Cuffing season. No.
Wait, you don't? Oh my God.
I don't think so. I mean, I can make an educated guess.
Well, you know what? I'd like to hear what that educated guess is. And then I'll tell you the accurate answer.
Cuffing. Well, so I think of cuffing as like rolling up something.
Oh, or, see, I think of handcuffs. That's immediately what I go to.
Oh, see, I was, and then I guess is it like,
Michelle's
tied
thinking
down?
Of bed romantics. But that's where her mind normally goes. But I will say this. It's actually a little more romantic than that. Not to say that handcuffs can't be romantic in the right setting. But
oh, they can be romantic in the right setting.
Or the wrong setting, too, to be fair. I will tell you what, according to the most accurate source online, Google AI is. Cuffing season is a often temporary dating trend during colder months, typically October to March, where people seek romantic partners for companionship, warmth, and holiday events. Driven by colder weather and a desire for connection, it stems from the idea of handcuffing or locking someone down to avoid winter loneliness.
Okay.
So I do like the, you know, lock and get someone on lockdown. I like that, but that's a terrible name for it. They should come up with something else.
No, it's like, it should be like, fire season or like something, you know, you want to like.
It's like keep me warm season.
Yeah.
Well, the whole thing is it's a little bit disciplinarian when it comes to like, there's almost an authority angle to it, right? I'm going to cuff you. I don't consider that.
I'm
going
to cuff you is like words that get whispered to me. I'm like, okay, let's lock the doors and pull down the shades.
That's
what it does. Well, Michelle's cuffing season is never leaving the bedroom, but we'll move on beyond that.
Dude.
Well, you know, when your boyfriend is in law enforcement, those handcuffs come in kind of handy.
I know. I have FOMO sometimes of Michelle's love life. I'm like, for fuck's sake, I have 4 kids. Like, I'm barely squeezing it in, like, before someone's asking for a juice or a sippy cup.
It's kind of latching onto somebody. Like, it's like, think about this. You're a bear and you want to hibernate. Wouldn't you want another bear in your cave, Michelle?
No, I want a fucking lion.
But we didn't need a podcast to tell us that.
No. I don't know about bears.
I think there's already a show like that, 2 Bears, 1 Cave.
There is.
That's already been taken.
Michelle's life is cuffing season.
Oh, my God.
Her entourages are cuffs.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't.
No.
I'm trying to.
No, each one of your entourage members serves a purpose for your life. Let's be fair. You have teams around you.
Have very good people in my life, but it took a while to get a good group of people in my life. Like, it's not it is not something I think is easy to do.
My bar is pretty low. I'd like to say that I set the bar so low I fucking trip on it.
Is it tied around your shoelaces and you just can't,
every time I'm like, there's that goddamn bar. Well, fuck. And I can't,
right, it's like, god damn it, how did I miss that? Oh wait, but yeah, no, it's and I guess it's different when you deal with how people deal with people different times of their life. Everyone I deal with is in some kind of crisis, right? Like, I don't get people or meet people where, hey, life is going great, so let's, you know, be friends. It's usually, hey, I'm in crisis. How do we fix this? I mean, that's almost always what happens. So I don't know that I ever meet anyone that's life is going just dandy, because if they're coming to see me, they're going to be in a courtroom soon, and that's probably not where they want to be.
They say, be careful what feels like home if home was toxic and chaotic. And I think that that should be just plastered over every, next to every, you can climb tall mountains, inspirational posters at school. It should also be like, if home is fucked up, be careful who you love because it feels safe to you. And I say this to women a lot, and I really want to reach like a younger woman too, when you're in the initial dating cycles and the first few dates, because your body, we are so attuned. We are an instrument. We are energy. If that's all, like, I'm not trying to get all woo woo, but we are energy, and you're going to attune to certain people. And when someone makes you feel off, what women are confusing when the signals are crossing with like romance and Disney love and all the things that we've been indoctrinated with is that those butterflies in your stomach are literally your nervous system telling you to fucking run. And we're confusing it. We're like, oh my God, I get like, I want to barf every time I see them. I must love them. You know, you're going, wait, what is it? And then the safe person is boring AF. You're not feeling anything. So if you grew up in a relationship in your household where the dynamic was toxic and chaotic, you are going to resonate with that. That's going to feel familiar to you. And you're going to be like, oh, this must be love. And the person who is not that, who isn't making your body feel those things, they're going to feel very, very, very boring. And it's going to be something that you're going to have to work through. But that's the safe person. That's the person who is not lighting up your nervous system, telling you to run. But when you've done it for so long, you're like, I guess this person like really loves me when they yell at me. I guess this person, because like however you received love or however you were trained to feel, when you receive it as an adult or someone being like, you know, just what do they call them? Like sideways comments or like somebody where they're just sort of saying like, well, I'm not meaning to offend you, like, or backhanded comments. Yeah. You got your mama's thighs or like something, whatever it is. Those, excuse me, I drink milk and I'm really trying to believe that I'm not allergic to dairy, but oh, fuck, it keeps showing up. So I love, girl loves a flat white, but I'm like choking on a D. So I really think it's important to understand the childhood connections. So what you grew up at home, you know, you need to realize that those pathological people show up again in your life. And that's where the work and the onus is on us to do the work. And the person who is on the other side, who you're like, oh, they had a tough childhood, or, you know, they're only mean because people were mean to them. No, we're not doing that. We're all grown ass people. We need to take care of our grown ass selves and fix those childhood wounds. That mama wound, that daddy wound, there's no excuse for it now.
There's no reason to bring that and recreate it in your life, because you do. I mean, but generally speaking, you look at when you get in a relationship and get married, you're young, you're in your 20s, maybe early 30s, and you still feel that, oh, the excitement's supposed to be there. Oh, it's supposed to have the butterflies. No, you're not. Like, when you're with a person that you are safe with, it's, you can breathe. And it's like, and then you get to be yourself. And being yourself is, because when you're with the person that's like the narcissistic, abusive, you know, gaslighter, you don't get to be yourself. And in fact, you lose who you are. And you lose who you are pretty quickly. And then when you get out, you look back and go, what? And you had just recreated your childhood because you saw either your mom go through it, your dad go through it. And you recreate it because that chaos, you knew, you learned how to operate within as a kid. You learn how to operate within those relationships as an adult because you managed it as a kid and did just fine. Although you didn't do just fine.
I say this to anybody who's listening, who's going through a toxic relationship or is in abuse, that you can break that cycle. I literally just had two thoughts. I'm either going to teach my children that this is the relationship that they should be in and how they should treat their partner and accept that, and they're going to accept it because I'm accepting this and I'm modeling that, or they're going to be this person. They're going to turn into the abuser. One of two things are going to happen. So I have to make the decision right now to completely abandon the idea that, you know, breaking up a family is bad. We are unsubscribing from that notion. If you are in an abusive, toxic, bad, it's just not working relationship, you're not doing anybody any favors by sticking around until they're 18 or out of the house or whatever the fuck. We're done. Healthy kids thrive in healthy environments, whatever that may look like. And you remove the toxic, everything will change. But you have to come to that understanding, right? That it's okay. And you're not a spinster and you're not divorced, the big D. Like, no, we're good.
Kids thrive in healthy environments, and staying until they're 18 and out of the house or 18 and graduating is usually not in their best interest, because you're modeling behavior that they will end up doing down the road anyway. You're either teaching them how to be treated as an individual, or you're teaching them how to treat other people, whether that's good or bad. And getting out, everyone's like, well, you know, single parent household. I got to tell you, sometimes those kids are so much better off than the ones that stay married, because they're not exposed to the consistent and everyday toxic behavior. Like, that's probably one of the biggest mistakes I made. I didn't get out sooner.
The same person who won't hold the baby for 5 minutes so you can take a shower is the same person screaming 50-50 custody in fucking court. So like, you know this and you can do it. I would much rather, I used to rehearse things I would say to my partner like a child. And this is my partner. And I would be like, I'm going to think about like, what mood, read the room. What's the mood? What's the temperature? What's happened? What's their day like? A million things I'd have to, like a CVS receipt of things that I would have to be in line in order for me to say, I think I want to spend some money on something, or I have something I need to tell you. I want to go to art class, or whatever it is that I want to do for myself. I was rehearsing it and thinking all the ways. And oftentimes I would abandon the question or whatever. But that was real. And then the mental load that I had and all the ways that I was dealing with, like if that my job was the mom, that meant all encompassing, no help from them or whatever. If your partner is telling you that they're going to babysit your own kids, red flag. I have to babysit the kids tonight. What? So there's all of these things that you're like, okay, now I can say this because I know.
They're your kids. You help make them.
I feel so much better as a single mother without some angry man in my house. Like, I'm good. And I'm like, it is so nice. And I'm like, I am more than happy to stay in that environment.
It is night and day different.
And I'm not feeling any extra work. In fact, I feel less work because I'm less drained. The mental load is gone. The physical stress is gone. And then what you have is just the things you were doing anyway, being the mom, doing the pickups, doing the laundry, getting the groceries. When you can do all of that without somebody telling you you're a rotten cunt, you can do all things. You're a fucking baddie. You can do hard things.
Lindsay, I know our listeners are going to want to know where to find you. So why don't you tell them where they can find you?
You can find us on any streaming platform, Apple, Spotify, anywhere you get your shows. We are Bitches a Bad Word podcast. And on Instagram, I answer all our Instagram DMs personally. It's at Bitches a Bad Word pod. TikTok and YouTube is Bitches a Bad Word. I drop my episodes every Tuesday and Thursday. I have a show called Bitch Sesh where I just highlight survivor stories and they come on and share anonymously. And if you want to send me your texties from your exes, I will read them on the show. You can DM them, text them to 331-BITCHES, and we can share stories together. Stitch and bitch.
Thank you for joining us on today's episode of Love, Lust, Law. Want to reach out or find out more about what's going on with me? You can follow me across social media platforms at Attorney Michelle Locke. You can also send me an email to hello@michellelocke.com. Just remember, Michelle is spelled with one L. Thanks to my mother, Margot, with no T. Have a great one.